Hey there, everyone. I hope you are all having a fantastic day. First off, I just wanted to thank you all for listening to Beyond the Rock podcast. Jeremy and I have had a great time interviewing our guests, and we look forward to bringing many more rock climbers onto our show. Today's guest on the podcast is ER doctor Jamie Roper. This interview was conducted on June 28th while Jamie was visiting Denver, Colorado. She had just spent some time in Idaho and Wyoming and was getting ready to fly back home to San Antonio, Texas. We talked about traveling during these unique times, how she got started rock climbing, what the San Antonio community looks like, and some interesting experiences she has had in the medical field. Now, Jamie wanted to specify that the views and opinions you will hear in this episode are hers and hers alone. These are not the views of the entire medical community, and a handful of ER doctors are actually not recommending travel at this time. So with that being said, I hope you are all staying happy and healthy out there. Thank you so much for tuning in, and please enjoy the show. Welcome to Beyond the Rock podcast. My name is Emily Hernandez, and I'm here with my co-host,
Jeremy Arntz.
And today we have Miss Jamie Roper joining in with us. How you doing, Jamie?
Great. How are you guys?
Doing great.
Rocking and rolling.
You love to refer to things as rocking and rolling.
Totally. I'm so metal, man. No, yeah. I'm not. Classically.
No comment.
Trained violinist here. So Jamie, where are you tuning in from?
I'm tuning in from Denver, Colorado, but I happen to be just visiting. So I fly out tonight back to San Antonio.
All right. And what were you doing over in Colorado? Or what are you?
What am I doing? Well, I started out in flying into Salt Lake, and then I had never been to the state of Idaho. I have three states left to hit, so Idaho is my third to last state, and a buddy of mine who's just dirt bagging and traveling around the U.S., he's paragliding, mountain biking, and climbing. He knows that I wanted to go to Idaho, so he met me in Salt Lake, and then we drove up to the City of Rocks, Idaho, and did some climbing up in Idaho. And then I climbed a little too hard and I was sore, too sore for day two of climbing. And so we were looking at where we could hike. And then we started talking about the Grand Tetons, which I had also never been to. So then we drove over to the Grand Tetons and went biking and hiking up in the Grand Tetons. And then decided to hit, I'm going to pronounce it wrong, Vedawu in Wyoming. And then I changed my ticket. It's bittersweet, but because of COVID, you can change your tickets for free. So then instead of flying from Salt Lake home, then I found that I could fly to from Denver home. And then I guess just serendipitously, I found that my family was going to be hiking in Rocky Mountain National Park. And I have a very close friend that lives in Denver. So I contacted my close friend and said, hey, do you want to come hiking with my family? Can me and my friend Dan come stay? And so then we decided to come down to Denver. And yesterday we did a 15-mile hike with my family and hung out with the fam for the weekend. And then today I got up and went climbing just for a short day in Golden or Clear Creek Canyon, I think it's called. And so it's good. I went mountain biking for the first time too.
Well, hot damn. Nice.
So how are you feeling about getting on a plane? That's my question.
I'm honestly not too worried about it. I mean, for my profession, I'm an ER doc, so I'm exposed to COVID kind of every shift, every day. So, and then on the planes, I found that they keep the middle row seat or Southwest does, and then everybody has to wear a mask. So then if somebody is coughing or sneezing, then it's not being spread. And then the planes all have HEPA filters, so they're filtering the air constantly. So, I mean, it's not without risk, but also like I'm trained in how to sterilize myself for my profession. So, careful.
I was going to say, I'd heard some airlines were not keeping the middle seats open, and not going to lie, man, like I've become like a germaphobe because of all this.
Oh, no doubt.
I don't even like to go. Like I haven't even been into a store. Like the closest I came to anything like that is the time I rode with Emily to Home Depot. Like, that's the closest I've come to another human being that I don't live with in 4 months.
And you're out of Austin?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah, I've been traveling a little bit, I guess. Yeah.
Well, I mean, a lot of people have.
Yeah, but also, I mean, when you think about like where we've been car camping, so I've been sleeping in the back of my buddy's truck. And so we haven't been in a hotel and haven't been exposed to too many people or too many things. And then when you're out hiking and climbing, it was very, very weird though, hiking yesterday in Rocky Mountain National Park. When we were hiking in Wyoming up in the Grand Tetons, it was normal, but Rocky Mountain, everybody had masks on. So then when you walked by them, you felt like this heathen because they would not have their mask on and then they would see you hiking and then they would put their mask up over their mouth so that they're not breathing the same air that you're breathing to protect themselves, which just felt very, very awkward and a little bit less friendly, I guess.
Yeah, but. I don't know. So where have we landed on it living on hard surfaces? Because that's my other thing about going to a hotel is that like I don't know who's touching things in there and...
It can live on hard surfaces, but I mean, what people need to be most worried about is being in close quarters for, you know, an extended period of time. So, I mean, you're right to be worried about that airplane travel or be on a bus or just be in close proximity to somebody else. I mean, the highest risk is household, somebody that's living in your household and you're breathing the same air. So it's, fomites aren't without risk, but they're not the biggest risk.
And there's that whole toilet situation that's going on.
The toilet situation?
Oh, so you flush the toilet, it like COVID can get spread like 3 feet in the air or something?
Yeah. I mean, wash your hands, wear a mask if you're in, you know, the whole time I'm in the airport, I'm wearing a mask, I'm washing my hands, I'm making sure that when I leave the bathroom, I'm not touching the door and that I'm not touching anything that other people have touched. And if I do, I just sanitize my hands.
Fair enough. I have a complex at this point.
No, I think it's good. I think it's always good to stay safe. There's
I'm a programmer, so everything is either one or zero, right? And then you get into the area. You get into the area of like cross contamination. Like you try to put stuff on this side of the counter and then clean everything and put it on that side of the counter. But then do I have it on my, you know, did I touch the package with my forearms? Did I wash my forearms? Is it on my clothes? Should I change my clothes? Would you take an entire shower because I went outside? Like
And
the problem is there's like very little good information out there for people that it's just like, okay.
Well, and I think it's just not that there's not good information. It's that we just don't have the information. There haven't been the studies done because it's so new that, you know, us, you know, as a physician, I'm learning right along with everybody else. And then I'll learn something one day and then there's another study comes out. So you'll have a study with four people that'll say something and then they'll do another study with 100 people that'll say something different. Or, you know, just as far as medicines, what to give, they'll have, you know, 10 people and they'll give a medicine to them and they'll say, hey, this medicine's great. It works. You should give it to everybody. And then we start giving it to people and we find that we're actually causing more side effects from the medicine than we actually are helping people. But you need that data and you need time to know what's actually going on. And so, I mean, you have to, you know your risk and be careful. But I would say as far as, you know, traveling and doing things outside, you know, be careful no matter what you're doing, wear a mask, wash your hands. And I think, you know, what kind of the government has been stressing is the most important thing is to wash your hands, which everybody should be doing anyways before you eat or, you know, after you've touched something. But I think COVID has kind of brought that all into light and you notice people are doing a lot more hand washing and sanitizing their hands before eating, which is a good thing that hopefully COVID will teach people even when COVID's gone, they'll wash their hands before eating and after the bathroom.
I was gonna say the one thing that's irritating me is the fact that there's people are having, you know, people have these very mild cases of COVID and then they end up with asthma or they end up with heart issues afterwards. And no one is talking about that. Like they're just, I feel like people who are younger are just like, I'm gonna take the risk. Maybe I'll get sick and in 30 days I'll be fine. But then you got all these people who are saying like, I was a marathon runner and that was 3 months ago and I still can't run a mile because my lungs.
Yeah, but you have to give them time. I mean, with any cold, you just don't feel it because it's mild, but with most colds, you know, you can have a cough for 6 weeks after you have a regular virus. It's common where you don't feel as drained, you don't feel as tired, but you're still going to have a little cough. And so there's, you know, some impact on your body. And there are cases of, you know, young people having some lung issues afterwards and then also some heart issues afterwards, but that's very, very rare. And so it's good to be vigilant. It's good to be careful. COVID's not without risk, but I think it's also, you know, you don't want to be scared to the point that you're not able to live your life and, you know, make sure that you're doing what you need to do to maintain a good level of mental health. And if, you know, you need to be outside and go on a hike to maintain mental health and to be happy, then do it, but do it with precautions. If you want to go hiking with your friend, then, and your friend doesn't live in the same household, you can wash your hands before you go on a hike. You can wear a mask if you want, if you're going to be within 6 feet, and you can still get out and you can still do those things. Yeah.
No, I really appreciate all of that, Jamie. I lost my taste and smell 100% back in March. It's only back about, only back about 50%. And, so back then we didn't have a whole lot of information, and I just kind of had to deal with the reality, that it may never come back, and that I would just have to trust other people if there were dangerous, you know, smells or, you know, a lot of people don't think about that when at first you're like, oh, I don't smell stinky climbing shoes, or I don't smell like dog parts or like, you know, just stuff that's like rank. But at the same time, it does yield some danger. And especially in my career, I couldn't even trust myself to do my granola bars. I had to stop cooking. I had to stop producing. I mean, also some of the ingredients I needed are very unique, and I was having a hard time getting them because I didn't expect to have to deal with any issues with that industry. But I had to pretty much like stop.
Oh man, I wish I could have been there for you for that. I would have just been your taste tester.
But that's what I'm saying is like, you know, I work solo. And so what that told me was, just like with everything, we're tribal beings. We can't always do everything by ourselves. You know, you have a whole team that you work with, I'm sure. You have trained, you know, so many people. Like, I needed to realize that I needed some help. And I guess I want to roll into you being a doctor. So when I met you, it was at Lifetime Fitness, and I was so happy to see another woman climbing. Yeah. You know, moving to San Antonio and working in San Antonio, talk to me about the climbing community there and what you have found is great about it, or what you think needs some work to create more community.
Oh, I think San Antonio has come a long way, actually, since I lived there. Especially with Armadillo, I should give a shout out to them because they're amazing, which is a new climbing gym in town. But I feel that it's kind of cool because the climbing community in San Antonio is really tiny. So I feel like no matter what, when you meet another climber, you kind of have that instant bond or kind of instant friendship, which is really cool. But I think when I first was moving to San Antonio, I'm not much of a boulder, so... even though I'm at Armadillo now, but there was the district and then there was Lifetime, and Lifetime is so hard with the schedule and the restricted hours, that it was difficult. But I think, now that Armadillo is open and then Medicine Wall is open, and then I finally am strong enough to start working routes at Cub Cave, it's been really nice. But yeah, I love the climbing community in San Antonio. I think everybody's really open. Everybody's really friendly. I'm still constantly meeting new people. And almost every other time I'm at the crag, I'm meeting somebody new. And if I find somebody that has off during the week, because I often have to work weekends and then have off random days Monday through Friday, I'm always looking for partners that can climb with me during the week. So it's nice to have an open community like that and to be welcomed. And also, I think Austin too. I think for a while I was climbing with a lot of people from Austin. We had a Tuesday, Thursday group out at Reimers that welcomed me, and they're my favorite group of people. I met them one day randomly on a Tuesday. I think that I had went out, and then they invited me into their group. And there's one girl, Diana, that she climbs really hard. She climbs 12 Cs. And at the time, I just considered myself a 10 climber. And it wasn't until climbing with her. She's like, you can't climb 12s until you get on 12s. But I had this mindset where I felt like I couldn't try 11s until I could always on-site any 10 that I got on. And so I always just felt like I couldn't on-site every 10, and I still can't on-site every 10. But I've been getting on harder climbs because of her and because of her encouragement. And I have gotten, you know, sent some or several 11s now, and I'm working 12s, and I sent one 12A, but I don't know if it counts because it was probably the easiest 12A on the face of the earth.
If that's what it's rated, I mean, it's the, which was this 12A? Where was this at?
Then I get it. Oh, the 12A is down in Mexico. It's called the Sword. And if anybody's really working and they want to on-site their first 12A, you could train harder. You could just go down to Mexico and get on the easiest 12A and send it.
A Potrero Chico is what I'm
And
El Patro Chico. El Patro Chico.
Man, Jamie, I gotta say, I'm just gonna hop on your bandwagon real quick. That photo of you with that North Face shirt that I asked you for is stellar. I think that's the epitome of a rock climber right there. Not a female climber only. I would like to share that on our social media if that's okay, along with another photo of your pretty face. So have you always been an outdoorsy type of woman, or were you introduced to it later in life? Or
yeah, I've always loved the outdoors. I didn't start climbing until my senior year of college, but I'd always wanted to be a climber. And I joke with my mom, she said that when I was 3, I used to bang on the window and I would point at mountains. And we had lived actually in Colorado at the time. I was too young to remember, so I don't really ever say that I had lived here. But when I did, I'd bang on the windows and I'd point at the mountains and I would tell my mom, "Mom, I'm going to climb that." And so then she, of course, like any good mother, took me to the flattest places on earth. We lived in Arkansas for about 10 years, but in the flat area of Arkansas, not in the Ozarks. And then she took me to Wisconsin, which is relatively flat, to keep me safe. And then it was in college. They built a climbing wall when I was in college. And then I started climbing in the climbing wall in college. And so it's something I had always wanted to do and always thought was cool, but never really had the opportunity until college. And then I've been in love ever since.
Right on.
Up in Wisconsin, you gotta do some ice climbing.
But again, it's really flat. There probably is some ice climbing. I actually lived in Pennsylvania for 10 years there, and there's more ice climbing. Well, I was exposed to ice climbing in Pennsylvania, but never in Wisconsin. I imagine there has to be some, though.
I would assume so. I'm from Michigan, which is pretty flat, but the ice climbing festival is in Michigan. There's waterfalls and stuff, so.
Yeah, yeah. Well, probably Northern Wisconsin.
There is a ice climbing festival. I don't know if it's the ice climbing festival. They made a documentary about this.
Okay.
You know, speaking of documentaries, Jamie, do you ever watch, climbing porn, as we like to call it, or, get inspired by films or videos that people put out?
I think I'm one of the rare people. I don't watch too many climbing videos. Probably the only thing I watch is when my friends, send me a meme or send me something funny, then I'll take a peek at it. But I do love watching the real rocks. I love getting together and watching those. Sure. And I think it was hilarious. I watched, I can't remember which number it was, but it was where Sonny was on there with Alex Honnold. And he was saying how she wasn't a real climber. And a couple months after watching Real Rock, then I happened to be in Vegas at a climbing gym and she was there crushing way harder than me. And I've been climbing for like 17 years at the time. And I was like, oh, well, I guess I'm not.
Sonny, Alex's partner, or his fiance now?
Fiance now.
Yeah. Okay, sorry. I'm not.
Fiance, yeah, yeah. So I saw her climbing and then we ended up going and talking with her. And I didn't tell her at the time, but I just watched what she was climbing and she was climbing way harder than me. And I was remembering how Alex was saying she wasn't a climber. And I was like, dang.
The only thing I remember Alex saying bad about her was that her bling was maybe not so great.
Well, maybe when you have somebody that's new to doing that, you should start with the basics and the standards and not blame, that person. All I'm saying, we're all responsible here. I broke my back in 05 from motocross.
Oh, no.
And I know he broke his back after he was dropped. But we were speaking to Katie Lambert earlier and Jeremy as well. We were just discussing the necessity of the basics. Yep. To keep you safe. Mm-hmm. I think Lynn Hill took a fall because she thought that she was tied in. I don't know, to an anchor, or she forgot to tie in. I think she fell a decent amount. This was a while back. I'll have to look for this specific scenario, but a lot of people, will mention, as we've noticed, that rappelling accidents are oftentimes a source of death or potentially fatal injuries. Why do you think that climbers sometimes diminish the importance of safety? Do you think it's ego? Do you think it's lack of knowledge?
I don't think it's ego and I don't think it's lack of knowledge. It's probably a combination of fatigue. And I think when you're doing something and you're awake, then it's unlikely that you'll make mistakes. And so you do something and you're awake and you're awake and you're awake, and then you end up going on a trip or you go in somewhere and you're pushing your limits and you're climbing harder than you've ever climbed and you're doing things that you've never done. And now maybe you didn't sleep well the night before, or maybe what you did really pushed you at your limit and now you're overtired and you're exhausted. And when you're overtired and you're exhausted, I think that's when you make mistakes. And so if you don't, you know, like me and my partner today, every single time we looked at each other's knots and we're double checking and we're triple checking each other. And it just becomes second nature. So I think people become complacent because they're used to doing things when they're awake and they're not double checking. And then when you have those times that you're tired and you're pushing yourself at your limits, you make mistakes because you're overtired and you're not double checking. So I think really the only way to get around that is to, you know, double check each other. And, you know, something silly that I messed up with, I was just climbing at Medicine Wall in San Antonio the other day, and we had a 70 meter rope when you only probably needed a 50 meter. And my friend was like, "Oh, you didn't tie a knot at the end." And I'm like, "We're single pitch climbing. Like, why do I need a knot at the end of my rope when I have 25 extra meters on it?" In my mind, it's not necessary. But in their mind, it's kind of like, hey, when you're multi-pitch climbing, you should always have those. So if you get in the routine of doing something that seems silly in the moment, then you're less likely to make those steps when you're, you know, multi-pitch climbing or doing those other things. So I think it's, I think people just don't do the safety checks when they think they're not necessary, and then it doesn't build a routine. So the point isn't to do the safety checks because you need it in that moment. You need it when you're overtired. And so you need to do it every single time so that it becomes routine and it becomes second nature.
I do agree with you. And I have just a follow-up. Sorry, I know I keep interrupting, Jeremy, but you just inspire a question I often have. And that is, if you are a witness of people who are doing something that could potentially be dangerous, if the gregory is backwards, if they are if they're holding the top of the rope on it, you know, they're using an ATC, they're trying to break with the top of the rope and they're not holding it below, breaking off. What's the etiquette? Do you approach it? Do you walk away? And
I feel like I have to approach it, because I feel like if I'm in the presence of somebody that's doing something scary, like I have to say something. And sometimes it's something as simple as like, hey, can I give you a catch? Like, I noticed that your partner's new into belaying. Can I catch you, you know, on this lead climb? Or I have probably the scariest one, and it was at the gym. We won't mention the name of the gym, but I think you'll know what it is.
The gym shall not be named.
But the scariest thing that I saw was a new belayer was lead belaying with a gregory, and instead of I don't even know how to describe it, but when they were going to feed, they were taking the lever, pulling the lever back, and then pulling rope off the top. So essentially, like, it was open, and I happened to be on the other side of the gym belaying my friend, and I have no idea like why I looked back at that moment, but I looked back and I saw them doing this, and the worker didn't know how to lead belay with a gregory, I'm imagining, because I don't know why they would have let that person belay in this manner. But it was like I think they were young. They were like 14-year-old kids. And I saw that, and I instantly like told my partner, he was like mid-climb. I was like, hey, I have to let you down. And they were not too happy with me, but I lowered them mid-climb. Like took my belay device, left my belay device on the rope, and like sprinted to the other side of the gym. And I didn't make it there in time, but the lead climber fell, and then the, you know, a lot more slack came out before the belayer let go of the device. But I was so frustrated. And so I showed him how to use the device, and explained like what they were doing was unsafe. But it was frustrating to me because I shouldn't have to do that. If I'm climbing at a gym, I shouldn't have to be, you know, looking around and making sure that the workers are making sure that people are belaying properly. But I don't know. I feel like if I'm in the area and there's an accident that happens, I'm, you know, as an emergency physician, I'm going to be the one that's cleaning stuff up. You know what I mean? So, I mean, the number one thing that you want in my profession is prevention, and preventing mistakes and preventing people from being hurt. So if I see somebody doing something really unsafe, then I'll do my best to help. And sometimes you can't, like sometimes you see people having drinks and being, you know, wasted at the crag, or you see people doing wrong and you try to explain what they're doing and you try to teach them and they ignore you. And then you just, you know, step back, and then you're there if they need you, and hope that nothing bad happens. But
last question on this, do you think gender has any part to play when people are defiant when you are trying to help them?
Oh, absolutely.
Is it typically males that have the issue with this or women?
Yes, yes. I just want to specify
when I am being pro-woman and bringing these things up, it does not mean that I am being anti-man. These are just statistics and I'm very interested in numbers and just trying to figure things out. So I just want to preface that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, all men are equal, because there's, you know, a lot of guys that I've been out with that, you know, are super amazing, and they know that, you know, I'm not the strongest of climbers, but I have been climbing for a really long time. So there's just some knowledge gained with time. And so if I have advice or I have something to say, they're always, you know, willing to listen. And, you know, my close guy friends, of course, like, respect me, and, you know, we'll talk through something. If, like, I think they're doing something wrong or they're nervous, like, we'll, or I'm nervous about what they're doing, even if they think that it's safe, we'll talk through it and make sure that we're both agreeing upon everything. But I will say, sometimes if you have, you know, a macho male, they're very resistant to me giving advice or explaining something, or even, I was just complaining the last time I was up in Colorado. This was, you know, so silly, but my friend, Mackenzie, who I was staying with, it was her first time out climbing. And so we were on, it was quite a, you know, 5'7" top rope. It was going to be very easy. But when you look at the way the top rope was going, the rope went up and then the anchor was to the right of the climb. And so I was nervous if she fell at any point, she would swing. And some new climbers are okay with swinging, but I've had a lot of people who swing and then they freak out and they're scared and they're nervous. And so, you know, the guy that I went with was, first of all, I put a helmet on her, and he was like, "Oh no, no, you don't need a helmet.
You're on top rope.
You don't need a helmet. Okay, you're on top rope. There's no reason you need a helmet." But again, like, I think the first time climbing, you should be as safe as possible. And it just, you know, if I have a helmet, let me put a helmet on her. And I wanted her to climb so that, you know, she would have a directional, so that if she fell, she wouldn't swing and she wouldn't be scared. And he's like, "Oh no, no, she doesn't need that. You know, I'm in the military and I'm special forces and my guys swing all the time and it's fine." And so then he didn't want me to put a directional. And then I tied in her figure eight knot. And then after tying it, he came over and he didn't think that it was dressed perfectly enough. So then he came over and completely, like, retied the knot so it was dressed perfectly, which, you know, if you have, it does untie easier if you have a perfectly dressed knot, but my knot was safe. It was fine. And it frustrated me that I felt like he wasn't Mr. Safety. He didn't want her to put on a helmet, and he made fun of me putting on a helmet. He didn't want a directional, and, you know, it was like, she doesn't need that. But then when it came to this figure eight, then it had to be, like, absolutely perfect, and my knot wasn't good enough. And I don't know, had I been a guy, is he just chauvinistic? He's better than everybody. Or is it because I was a female? I don't know, but I took it as because I was a female. And then we got on, there was another climb that we got on, and it wasn't maybe like 10D. It wasn't like that difficult of a climb, but on the crux, he couldn't pull the crux. So he ended up, like, kind of cheating to get the, draw in, and then holding on to the draw to clip on the draw, and then also to pull the move, pulling up on the draw to then get to the next hold. So he got to the top of the climb, and then I wanted to lead it. So I was like, "Well, let's just pull the rope." And of course he's like, "Ah, I think you should just do it on top rope." And I was like, "No, I want to lead it." And he's like, "Well, I kind of struggled on it, so I don't think you should lead it." And I was like, "Listen, you pulled on the draw. If I, you know, can't get up, then I'll pull on the
draw."
Very
diplomatic.
And so he was quite frustrated with me and my persistence of, like, pulling the rope. So of course, like, in my head, I was like, "All right, I'm not pulling on the draw. I'm pushing this climb just to spite. And again, I don't know. I think that, like, was because I was a girl. I think if it was another, you know, muscular dude out there, he would have let the dude climb. But I think because I was a girl, he was like, "Oh, you shouldn't lead the climb."
I was gonna say, I feel like some of those guys act that way towards other guys too. And I know that I get it from them too, because I'm a chubby dude in a in a sport full of like buff dudes that take their shirts off and stuff like that, I am not taking my shirt off anytime soon. So, but the funny thing is when you see those guys in the gym and they have no like climbing ability, they're just strong. And then you like use some technique and get up the problem way easier than they do. And then they shut up. That's awesome. I also had a guy on Instagram. There's no polite way to say what he said, but he basically told me that, you know, helmets were for babies or whatever.
Say what? Say it again.
Like helmets were for babies or. He might've used a.
Brains are for babies.
And I've already I was driving my Vespa and got hit by a car and had a concussion and I believe it was called a subarachnoid hemorrhage.
Oh dang!
What did he say? I want to know this helmet thing. What did he relate it to?
Oh, so no, basically,
no,
I did have a helmet. I don't know what he said for sure, but he might have said something like helmets are for pussies or.
Well, just to let you know, those are one of the strongest things on the planet because they do bring life onto.
Sure. And then so anyway, basically, I told him what had happened to me, and he just totally backed off on it. I'm like, I'm not. Basically, I've been told by doctors to never have another head injury.
Because, I'm sorry, Jamie, you were saying what happened to his brain when that?
So basically, he hit his head so hard that blood vessels inside the brain burst and started to fill with blood. Shit. And so the reason that I said he's lucky, because he's obviously not lucky for having a traumatic brain injury, but that can be deadly. And a lot of people, after having such an injury, are sometimes, you know, we call in medicine like essentially a vegetable where you can't talk, you can't feed yourself, you can't walk. You get fed through a tube that goes directly into your stomach, and then you breathe through a tube that's in your neck with a ventilator or breathing machine. And so, you know, I've seen a lot of those head injuries. And for him to be talking with us today on this podcast, climbing, showing up those bros with his technique of climbing, like that's
apparently phenomenal. It was really minor. And thankfully, I did not look up those statistics that you mentioned until about 2 years afterwards. But the side effect that I have is that I have to take anti-seizure medication because I did have 3 or 4 seizures. So, but okay. And then now I'm worried about things like CTE and all that kind of crap. So, but. We'll see what happens.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, head injuries or brain injuries are something to take very seriously.
So, Jamie, as a seasoned climber, as somebody who travels the world, which I definitely want to hear more about, you know, some of your destinations, what would you say to women in particular, also men, but women seem to have a harder time with it. If you get called names at the crag, or if people, you know, men more specifically, have unsolicited opinions about why you choose to do something, how you choose to do something, what is your advice to the women out there or those who identify as such to get past that and to not let it take you down?
Oh, I mean, for me, I just ignore it and try not to surround myself with those people. Yeah. And I mean, honestly, having climbed all over the world, I think, you know, you come into a different mix of people, but I've even, you know, I remember being in Croatia one day and getting to the climbing crag, and there was a guy and girl couple that got their rope stuck on the crag. And, you know, even the, you know, boyfriend was a guy, I'm sure, trying to impress his girlfriend. And then he got halfway up the route and couldn't finish it. And so they spoke a different language than me. I'm not quite sure what they were speaking, but I motioned to them like, hey, you want me to help you? And then we bargained in what language for take and give, and came up with some terms that we all understand for belaying. And then I went up and got their gear down for them. But that was a guy, and he was, you know, completely fine and appreciative. And then I ended up setting up ropes for them the rest of the day and climbing with them. Which is really nice. But I would say if you're female and people are being rude or, you know, condescending, then don't climb with those people anymore. There's tons of climbers. And I think that climbing is a really amazing community. And I've, you know, traveled all over the world and met lots of new climbers, and people are always welcoming. And if you have somebody that makes you feel uncomfortable or you're nervous about meeting up with the guy in the woods, follow your intuition. If you're nervous to meet up with somebody, then don't. And if you are climbing with somebody and you leave that day and you don't feel energized and you don't feel alive, and they don't make you feel good, then don't climb with that person again, because there's lots of other people out there that will. And if you're a female and you're nervous about traveling solo, I've done a lot of solo traveling and I feel like I've been fine. There's usually a lot of climbers out there and a lot of other people when you're going out, I guess, depending on where you go. And I've never felt unsafe or nervous meeting up with people.
Do you have any kind of, like when I go out on a walk or if it's late at night and I'm in a parking lot, I have these things called like bunny ears. I got them at, I think, like a knife store or something. You just put them on your fingers and they're literally super pointy. Mm-hmm. Do you carry, you know, anything like that? You said you work on weekends mostly.
Yeah, I don't. A lot of times if I'm going out climbing, I'm usually with another person, and I have done some solo hiking by myself. So depending on the area, I might have bear spray or something. I probably should carry
listen
something
to me being all mom,
me.
Like, do you have your rice?
I know.
Jamie.
And then a lot of times when I travel, I don't want to check luggage. If I am checking luggage, then I'll usually have a small knife with me. And so I'll have that for some protection. And then if I'm, you know, have keys with me, sometimes I'll put my keys kind of between my knuckles when I'm walking, so that if I need to, you know, hit somebody, then I could maybe poke somebody's eye out with a set of keys.
My dad always told me go for the eyes. He really did.
Yeah. But I'll, you know, carry that with me. But I've had very few occasions where I've needed to put that in my hands. And I would say for the most part, if I'm out in the woods or out, you know, by myself, I haven't felt nervous being out in that area. I'm more likely to be nervous if I'm in like a city by myself, or I'm walking from the bus station to my hostel, or from the bus station to an Airbnb by myself. I'll always, when I am traveling solo, I'll always try to book my flights and book my travel and book everything so that I'm never arriving to a city in the middle of the night or arriving late where I'm going to be walking in the dark by myself. So I do take those precautions.
That's great. Thank you for clarifying what sometimes we just need to hear again. Thank you, Dr. Roper.
Kind of weird, because as a guy, there's been times when I used to work in downtown Austin at the Frost Tower, and I took an elevator down to the parking garage, and there was just me and a woman on the elevator, and then she got off the same floor as I did. She went the direction that I needed to go, so I went the other way because I didn't want to freak her out. And then we ended up meeting, like, it's weird. Aww. Like my avoidance of trying to make her feel weird, I just ended up meeting her like on the other side somewhere. And I'm like, trust me, I wasn't trying to follow you.
No, John Mulaney is one of my favorite comedians. He did a lot of writing for SNL. He actually has a bit about that, about women now finding him as a potential threat. And he still thinks he's a boy, you know, like he didn't see himself like that. But when I was on this walk, it was a little too late, and the area that I was in, even though it was a good side of Austin, it wasn't very well lit. I'm new to the area. I ran into a bullfrog first, so that kind of surprised me. Just kind of chilled on the sidewalk, like, okay, what's up? And I did feel nervous, and I just thought, you know, I can't imagine that men have this same type of feeling, or, you know, have to deal with, you know, checking off this precaution list as much. I'm not speaking for everybody in either gender. And I think that's just something that we just have to deal with. And I used to be really bitter about it. Now I'm just like, all right, well, this is just, you know, just what we got to do.
I bet guys are scared too. I'm curious. I mean, now I'm going to have to ask some of my guy friends if they've ever been traveling. I mean,
I'd say for me, I'm a big dude. Not that I'm a fighter or anything, or skilled in any way of hand-to-hand combat. I'm not going to bomb around the east side of Austin not knowing where I am, like, alone, you know what I mean? Like, the problem is there's always somebody, either A, that can take advantage of you, or B, that's just, like, bigger, stronger.
Yes. If you're aloof, you got your wallet with cash hanging out, you're on your phone, so I guess I should clarify when I'm talking about that kind of stuff, but being an only child, I kind of have singular forms of thought sometimes.
I get what you mean. That, and as a guy, I try to be aware of what somebody may be thinking, especially when there's only two of us around. I don't want to freak anybody out.
Yeah.
Do you ever get intimidated by a woman? Like, you're in an elevator and there's this little Asian girl, but she's super jacked and you're like, she could take
me. I'm intimidated by all women, so.
Yeah, he
no, is. I mean, you know, no. I don't know. I guess my mom and sister are, and my stepmom are some of the people that I'm most scared of. This word, and my wife, but you know, and then I climb with a lot of women, and they're all better climbers than me, and you know, most of the women that I've ever worked with are smarter than me, and you know what I mean. So I'm just like, okay, whatever, it's cool. I don't try to play alpha.
Yeah,
I do try to. Everybody's younger than me because I'm 44, so most of the women I climb with are younger than me. So I do play dad sometimes, and be like, yeah, maybe you shouldn't date that guy because he's treating you like crap. Or don't date a climber, because if you bring a climber into the group, then we're probably going to like him. We may end up liking him more than you. And then, you know,
if you break up, then we got to deal with that.
You're gone. we have had to deal with that in our group. So it's weird.
You know, Jamie, one of the things, even though I don't think we've actually gone on a climbing date together, I think I've only seen you inside. I'm not joking. I'm not joking.
Sad. Okay, we need to change that.
I think we've connected about it, and then either you went traveling, or anyways, the point being,
yeah,
I always admire your travel life. I just think it's amazing that you open all those opportunities for yourself. And I guess I'm just curious, in the States as well as abroad, let's talk about the top three destinations. It could be any style, sport, any type of rock, multi-pitch, or do you want me to choose a type of rock so that we can, you know, narrow this down?
Oh God, don't choose a type of rock, because I know some people are picky and they're like, oh, I don't want to climb on that type of rock, or I don't want to do this. But for me, I just love being outside and I love being on rock, and I don't care if it's single pitch or multi-pitch or, you know, I just love being outside. And so I'm kind of happy with,
well, let's, with, you know, since you just recently, how do you pronounce Vitavu? Vitavu.
Vitavu? I don't know.
We need PSP over here. We need Pamela Shanti Pack. That's like,
oh no.
Yeah.
I've always heard it as Vitavu. So,
I thought so too, but then I saw how it was spelled.
That's probably.
And
yeah,
and we need to Google that. So let's talk about in the States, top three destinations that really made a mark on you. That really.
Okay. Top three climbing places. I think Red Rocks out in Vegas is definitely one of my top favorites. And then in Colorado as well, coming out here. It's just, yeah, it's, I know a lot of people say the climbing isn't phenomenal, but I love how close it is. I mean, you can still sleep in and make breakfast and then, you know, get in several climbs, whether it's multi-pitch trad or multi-pitch sport or single pitch sport, you can hit everything and it's so close and so easy to get to. But I think that, and then, so those two, and then one of my favorite places in the US is Acadia National Park. And I was a little baby climber when I first climbed there, but they have these cliffs where it's right up against the ocean. So you have this just beautiful crystal blue water, and then the waves are coming up and crashing against the cliffs. And then you rappel down. And if you look to the right or the left, you have these beautiful blue crashing waves. And then what's scary about it is you have to pick where you're going to climb, build a top rope, and then you're rappelling down. And oh, so my. You have to make sure that you're able to get, I guess you could use an ascender and get up, but you have to make sure that you can get up what you've now rappelled down. So that was daunting for me as a baby climber when I first went there. I'd like to get back out there. I know there's a lot more climbing and a lot of multi-pitch. When I was there, I wasn't in a multi-pitch.
And so,
yet.
Baby climber, you mean early in your climbing career, not like toddler?
Early, yeah. No. I didn't start till my senior year of college. So, I think I went. It was like 2005, maybe, that I went to Acadia National Park. And that place is gorgeous. I have top three places in the U.S., and that's one of my top three. But Maine, Acadia National Park, and then Rocky Mountain National Park, which I want to climb in, but just haven't yet.
Got it.
And then I would say Havasupai Waterfall in Arizona are, I think, the top three most beautiful places in the U.S.
Right on. Let's hear those international destinations.
Okay. I think the international destinations are so hard because sometimes a place isn't picturesque, but it's kind of more about the vibe and the climbing. So one of my most favorite climbing memories is Laos. I hope it still exists. There's this place called the Green Climber you can go to, and it's basically just a climbing destination. So when you go, you pretty much everybody that's there is a climber, and it's just a really amazing community. You'll meet people all around the world, and it's, they have three options. So you can be really fancy, and you can stay in like a, I guess not really fancy, but you can stay like in a cabin, or you can stay in a tent, or you can stay, I think they had like a hostel with bunk beds too. And me and my friend, we did the fancy style, and the fancy style is $22 a night. So then that's 11 US sure. dollars each a night to stay, you know, in a bed where you can lay flat. And if it rains, then, you know, you don't have to worry about getting wet. So we decided that 11 bucks a night was okay for our travel budget.
And then, typical climber, like, no matter what your income bracket is.
but you know, some of the climbers, you could pay $2 a night. I'm not sure how much the tents were, but I'm guessing $2. I have no idea. But everybody that's there is a climber, and then they do, it's kind of like you're at camp, but you're not at camp. So they have a little booklet, and then you go to order your food, and they just write down whatever you ordered in a booklet. And so there's no money being exchanged, nothing. So when you get there, they lock up all that stuff for you, your passport and your money, or you can lock it up yourself. And then when you leave, then you have the bill and you pay.
Nice.
But they have breakfast, lunch, and dinner at certain times. So then whenever people are having breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you come out of your tent or your, I guess, like bunk bed type hostel place or your cabin, and then you're all eating lunch together and you're meeting people. You know, there was people in that were 19, and then there were people in their upper 60s, low 70s that are telling, you know, climbing stories for the past 50 years. And you get to meet all their, these people and hear all their stories and have, you know, hear about their routes and have, you know, post climbing drinks with them. And it's amazing. And I met actually a really cool kid from the Philippines I met there, and he's doing a lot of route setting in the Philippines, and he happened to be coming through San Antonio, so I got to bring him out to Cub Cave.
Get him started on that 512 or 13. What is it? Starts with like a heel hook.
I know. But he climbs, I think, like 13s and 14s, so he was fine in Cub Cave. He sent my project, probably could have sent it blindfolded, but yeah, it was really cool to meet somebody on the other side of the world, and then, to get to come here, and they all made fun of me, because it's funny, because my doctor friends, they make fun of me for being like frugal and never spending money, and they make fun of my car because it's not the fanciest of cars, and so they're always teasing me because I work part-time instead of full-time. I actually would say 0.75. because I would rather have the free time to explore the world than to make more money. And so all the doctors tease me about being frugal. But then when I was in Laos at this climbing place, they're teasing me for being a doctor and spending all the money, because it was like 25 cents for a 40 ounce or 25 cents for a beer. And then it was $2 for a glass of wine. But the glass of wine they poured was really like two glasses of wine. So you would only need one. And I'm accustomed to San Antonio, where it's $14 for a glass of wine if you go out in the Pearl. So I was like, you know, I can have seven of these, and this equals one drink in San Antonio. So for me, I'm like, I'm not spending money. And for them, they're like, oh, the doctor is getting the glass of wine.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't. That's how life is.
I know. It's funny. But that, I love the vibe and I love the area. So it wasn't, you know, the most picturesque thing that I've ever seen, but it was just insanely gorgeous, or not insanely gorgeous, just the really experience. Cool vibe. And then, the experience. And then another cool area that I really liked is Arco, Italy. You can literally be staying in like a little town, like in a mini castle essentially, but they have these, you know, cobblestone streets and old buildings, and everything's really nice. And you can walk the block, and there's every climbing store that you could imagine. There's, you know, Arc'teryx and Patagonia and probably, you know, Black Diamond, but they have, you know, the whole city is basically a climbing mecca. And so you have tons of gear shops and tons of people, and then you can walk two blocks away and climb at a crag. And there's, I don't know, there was probably 20 different climbing crags in that area. And then if you want a rest day from climbing, you can be a ferrata, or you can walk or bike along a river. There's tons of stuff to do. Northern Italy is so gorgeous. And even there, I had a couple days with a friend that I got to climb with, and then I had a few days solo. So I just asked one of the gear shops, I'm like, hey, what kind of social group or where do I get on to find a climbing partner? And they're like, oh, well, we don't really know if there is one, but if you go to this place, the owner's a climber, or this guy's a climber. And then they ended up putting me on a WhatsApp group with 20 people. And so I just got to message, and then got to, you know, meet up with some local people that took me out climbing. So, nice. It was really nice.
So are we at two? We got Laos, Arco.
Yeah, I know. I'm like going through my head to figure out who to, which one to
we can just
next.
Say that these are dynamic answers. So for today and whenever anyone's listening, let's just, you know that.
Yeah. I like debating Switzerland versus, I like thinking of places in my head, but I also really liked, I'm trying to think. Actually, I think Vietnam.
All right.
If you go, okay, so if you go to Vietnam, there's something called Ha Long Bay. You don't want to go to Ha Long Bay because that's a touristy area, and it's so touristy that if you're laying on the beach or laying down, you're going to have 20 people come up and try to sell you a bracelet or give you a massage for $5 or, you know, like you can't just relax and do your thing. It's way too touristy. But there's a little island not far from Ha Long Bay, and it's called Cot Ba, and you're basically getting the same thing. And there's a ton of climbing on the island. You actually have to go to a climbing, it's like a little baby climbing shop, and then they do a belay test and make sure that you know how to belay and you know how to do the safety stuff. So they'll check you in order for you to get the permit to go out and climb. And then there's tons of climbing on the island, or you can pay to have a boat where they take you deep water soloing. So you'll go out in a boat, and they have the beautiful blue water with those cliffs that are just jutting up out of the water. And then you can do deep water soloing. And I was there. I was actually traveling with a friend that was a climber, but she got traveler's diarrhea.
No.
Poor girl. Yeah. So she was taken out for the count, and she was really sick. And so she was just not leaving the hotel for 2 days. And so then I was without a partner. So I ended up, just when I went to take my belay test, I ended up meeting some other people taking their belay test. And then we rented scooters for $3 and then went around the island climbing together. I think those are probably my top three.
So earlier when you were talking about the $2 glass of wine, you know, like it camping, they have camping and they have glamping.
Yeah.
So then I was joking around with a friend. I'm like, so what's the opposite of dirt bag? Like, you know, there's camping and glamping. What's this dirt bag and what? And my friend was just like, you're just a normal person. Like,
well, damn.
Cause I'm with you. Like if we go to Waco, I'm staying in an Airbnb. I'm not camping on the ground at the rock ranch. Yeah. I've done it.
Yep. I have too.
And I'll do it again. Yeah. If I go to the rodeo, I'll camp there. Cause that's where the party's at. But I'm 44 years old. I'm going to be 45 in a few months. Camping in that wind and cold is just not my thing. And getting up and going climbing the next day. No, thanks.
Yeah. But, yeah. I mean, I'll do it. I slept in a truck for 4 nights, I think before I got to Denver, but I was very excited to have a warm shower and a bed. Where
what's the other thing about the rock rodeo is there's no showers or anything. So you just kind of stinky.
Yeah.
But so earlier we talked about how bro-y climbing is, but how is the field of medicine as far as that goes?
It's a little bit bro-y, but I think much less so than climbing, for the most part. I have had a little bit, you know, being in medicine, when I was a medical student. I remember I worked really, really hard on a rotation, and I, you know, went 40 hours, but also in addition to, like, I probably studied 40 hours a week in addition to being there 40 hours a week. So I studied really hard, made sure to know my stuff for the rotation. And then the male doc at the end of the rotation, he's like, oh, you know, you're pretty smart for a female. And I kind of looked at him and I was like, you know, what do you mean pretty smart for a female? Are you saying that all the males are, you know, more intelligent than me? And he's like, no. And I was like, so would you say if there was a, smart male that I'm just this smart. And he's like, yeah. And I was like, okay, then I'm just smart. And I felt, you know, in retrospect, it was, you know, probably a little bit defiant of me, because here's my attending physician who's, you know, giving me a compliment. And instead of me being complimented, I'm pissed that he's saying for a female. For sure. But you definitely hear that. But I think there's like different areas of medicine, and in some areas of medicine, people are a little bit more bro-y, or, you know, some docs think that they're better than another type of doc, which really frustrates me. But I don't want to talk trash on a podcast about different different specialties.
I've heard surgeons are the worst.
I will not.
No comment.
Yeah, that comes from Jeremy, not Dr. Roper. Let's specify that. But I think in general, I'm just going to diffuse where this could be going. Is just that we as women often have been told, oh, you're pretty, fill in the blank, for a girl, for a woman, for a chick, for a lady. And sometimes there's a time and a place, but I feel you had every reason to, you know, comment like that with all due respect, because that was inappropriate. But
oh, for sure. And I think that I can say, as a guy, sometimes we say stupid things.
No.
Like I grew up in the 90s, where we said bad words and not even thought about it. Yeah. Like the words that we wouldn't use now. And I think that sometimes, as a guy, you want to define things by sex. And I think that's one of the things that we're working on getting away from now. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think I'll tell two stories, but all right. So my first story will be the good story, but
yeah, start with the bad one. Let's end with the good.
Okay. So being a physician, a lot of times I would find, so before my current job, I was in a teaching role. So it's a little bit like TV, where the doctor, they're a doctor, but they don't have a license to practice on their own yet. So the baby doctor goes in the room, they see a patient, they come out, and then they tell me, okay, I think the patient might have this and I want to run this test, and then I'll talk through it. And so now I'm going in the room second. And then as a female, I would go in and I would be like, hi, I'm Dr. Roper. I'm going to be your doctor for the day. I'm the supervising doctor for the first doctor that's in the room. We're a doctor team. I don't know how many times I said doctor there, but it was a lot. And I did that for every single patient, every single time, right? And then they would still be, you know, like if it was a, you know, the resident was a doctor female and I'm a doctor female, the patients would still be like, when are we going to see the doctor? How come a doctor hasn't been in the room when both me and the other female physician have been in there two or three times? And so it was very frustrating to me that even after saying doctor five times to a person, they still don't look at me as a doctor because I'm a female. And I would get very, very frustrated with that. And one of my most frustrating times was when a husband came out, and he, you know, came out yelling, and he's like, I've been here for an hour and a half and I haven't seen a doctor yet. And how come nobody's been in the room? And I was like, sir, I was just in there. He's like, no, I want to see a doctor. I was like, sir, I am a doctor. And this was about 3 years ago. You can tell that I'm still mad about it, even though it was 3 years ago. And he said to me, he's like, well, you're the doctor. And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, I said doctor five times. I said, you know, when I walked in the room, how do you not know I'm a doctor? And he says to me, well, how do you get paid? And I was like, excuse me? And he's like, does your husband get your paycheck? And like in his mind, you know, he was an elderly gentleman, I think in his lower 80s, but in his mind, he didn't know. And I don't understand how you don't know in this day and age, but how do you not know that women can have their own bank account and that I can work and earn my own money? But I was so frustrated with that, you know, that both her and I had been in the room several times, and here he is, you know, frustrated and angry with his care because he doesn't think that he's seen a doctor yet. And then he doesn't know that I can have a bank account and earn my own paycheck and pay my own bills and everything can be in my name, when it was, you know, this was 2017. Like, how can you not know that?
Where in the country was this? Was this in San Antonio?
San Antonio, okay. Texas. Yes. Yeah. And so having had that story, we'll fast forward, and I was at Lifetime Fitness with some friends climbing, and I had to go in for a night shift. So I went, showered, put on scrubs, and then came back in scrubs to say bye to my friends and give them a hug goodbye before I left. And there was this little girl that was in the gym climbing, and she's like, "Hi, are you a doctor?" And she came up and she just wanted to give me a hug because I was a doctor. And I was like, it warmed my heart for so many reasons. Because number one, you know, she looked at me and she didn't say nurse. You know what I mean? I didn't have a white coat on. I didn't have anything on. I just had my scrubs on. And here she is, a little girl, and she's saying like, "Oh, you're a doctor." You know what I mean? So I think, you know, some of the older generation has, you know, these gender roles and these things fixed, but it's, I'm not seeing it as much in the younger generation. And I really, really love that. And the little kids, you know, they'll call me doctor when I go in the room, and they're, you know, they hopefully will, you know, maintain that throughout their lifetime. But I really love that society is changing a bit, and you don't see that as much in the younger population.
Yeah, that's awesome. I got a little teary-eyed about that last story.
Awesome. I mean, it's setting an example in a way that you didn't even realize, you know, that you are representing a job and a gender. I think that, you know, we look up to as kids, we look up to people who look like us or, you know, something we strive to be, and we see it and we connect. And that's really awesome. Super cool.
I'm a programmer, and it frustrates me that there's not as many women programmers as there should be, because some of the most important programmers that have existed have been women. Like, the first programmer ever was a woman, and I don't think that people know that, and they should know that.
So. Yeah,
just like the first person to ever free the nose, Ms. Lynn Hill.
Yep. Up there, over there, you can't see it, but on top of my shelf, I have the Women of NASA Lego set.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. I got to meet one of the female astronauts. Oh, cool. It was really cool when I was doing a tour of NASA. I got super lucky, and there's a I'm not sure if he was Army or Air Force, but he is an ex-ER doc astronaut, and so he was a friend of one of my friends, and so we got the VIP tour of NASA. And then when we were getting the tour, there was one of the female astronauts, so then I got to meet the female astronaut. It was really cool. Yeah, she was giving one of her friends a tour. And then she then welcomed us in too. And so we got to hang out with a female astronaut too.
Hell yeah.
I'm a space nerd.
Yeah.
Oh man. Well, you know, Jamie, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate your insight in the beginning with what's going on in our COVID world. And I was wondering if you had any shout outs for us, for our audience today.
Oh, so now, all right. So before we were talking, I was just going to say, I just want to give a shout out to anybody that has a dream and that they don't think that they can do it, to not give up and to have faith in yourself. I had a lot of people before I went to medical school and before I became a physician that told me that I couldn't do it. And a lot of people, when I said I wanted to be an ER doc, that told me that I couldn't do it. And I feel like no matter what, when you work hard and put all of your energy and effort into something, you can do whatever you put your mind to. So whether it's a climbing goal or a career goal, don't limit yourself. I think our mind is what limits ourselves, and go for it and shoot for your dreams and stay safe. Just because I travel doesn't mean you should travel too.
But if you do, take the proper precautions.
Mask and sanitizer. Yeah. But I also want to give a shout out to my friend Diana. Just coming up, I think she really inspired me to climb harder and push my climbing goals. And I'm really thankful to have her in my life and to have her pushing me.
Right on. And did you mention about a San Antonio gym or one that you wanted?
Oh, yeah. I definitely want to give a shout out to Armadillo. I think they're doing really amazing things with the climbing community there. So I just want to thank them for being there. Thank them for helping Texas Climber Coalition, for helping Medwall be open, and for Armadillo for going out supporting them. I know the people running Armadillo are going out and setting routes and bolting at Medicine Wall. I guess it's not setting, it's just bolting. But yeah, I think what they're doing with the community in San Antonio is amazing, and I'm really thankful to have them.
Yeah, they sure are. We definitely are thankful to have them. And, you know, I'm going to spin off of your first shout out. And I am a firm believer that you do have the ability to be who and whatever you want to be. It does start with your mindset. and you have to surround yourself with the right people. And in regards to the climbing community, women and, you know, men alike, there are opportunities to lead. There are opportunities to be instructors. And the American Mountain Guide Association is a great place to start once you get some time under your belt. They have courses and certifications, and they have guide programs. And so if you are interested or want to see what it takes to become a guide, amga.com is where you can check that out. It's just a good start. And I just wanted to give a shout out because a lot of my friends have gotten certified through AMGA and they are all about the right things. So that's my shout out. Shout outs. I'll pass it on to Jeremy.
It's not, mine's not really a shout out, but I've never cursed on this podcast and I curse all the time. So my thing is wear a fucking mask. Just wear a fucking mask. Wash your hands. Fight racism. And if you're a guy in the climbing community, it doesn't discount to not be a jerk. But if you see other guys being a jerk, say something.
Yeah.
Yes. Amen. Thank you.
Preacher for sure. Jamie, thank you so much again. I can't wait to climb with you outdoors.
Yes, please.
One of these days in the future. And I want to thank everyone for listening today. Y'all have a rockin' day. See ya.
Bye. Thanks, guys.
Bye.